Blog Talk Radio.
Time with Pastor Steph.
Rise and shine. You're on with this due time with Pastor Steph. How are you this morning? That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. For this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. So, where were you yesterday? Yesterday we were shaking the Monday morning blues with the due time crew and our relationship conversation. Wow, signs, you're in a rare relationship that can truly last. This is an interesting conversation. I don't think we've had one something like this before, but we checked out some of these signs, and one of the signs that you were in a rare relationship that can last a lifetime, you can have fun together doing absolutely nothing. Now, when was the last time you could be with somebody, do absolutely nothing, and just enjoy their company? Oh, my goodness. You know, that is a true sign that you're in a real relationship that can last a lifetime, because there's no expectation. You know, we can just chill, look at a movie, or just sit and talk. We don't have to have an agenda. We ain't got to have no money, nothing. Yeah. All righty. What are the other signs? They make you want to be a better person. Yeah. Because, you know, they look at you and you look at them and, you know, you can really tap into, you know, what you can be, what God has designed you to be, who God has called you to be. And, you know, they make you want to, you know, really push and strive to be more than, you know, they are already. And when they push you to be more than what you're not resentful. And I think that's one of the weirdest dynamics I have ever heard, where people, you know, they're growing. And their growing doesn't even stimulate you to want to do better, but you get mad. Oh, they think they better than somebody now, and, you know, now all of a sudden now because they went to school, you know, now they think that they, you know more. Oh, my goodness gracious. That is definitely a sign that you're in a real relationship that can last a lifetime. All right. You know, we touched on one that was kind of interesting. Their friends are your friends. Now, this thing here, this one here, this was always a little interesting to me, because I always had to tell people, just because they're your friends, I don't necessarily mean they gotta be my friends. But you know, you're on the right path of, you know, or to spending time with this person for a lifetime is when everybody just ends up blending together. And, you know, their friends don't necessarily seem like they're your friends. You know what I'm, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I was saying it right. I'm saying their friends blend to feel like they're your friends. Yeah, you know what I'm trying to say. You know what I'm trying to say. Yes. That's how much they blend. But, you know, you're like, oh, okay, you know, everybody just hangs out. Everybody just chills. Everybody just connects. And that's something that doesn't always happen so easily. You know, like Tamika said yesterday, sometimes, you know, you have somebody, you're with somebody, and you just hate to see these people coming. Like, oh, no, here comes so-and-so. Why are they friends? You know, so you want to make sure that, you know, you're allowing God to choose the person that you spend your time with, because, you know, that's going to make the difference. That's going to truly make the difference as to whether, you know, you're in a relationship that is rare and that can last a lifetime. Okay. Well, yesterday was Monday, and we get the switch with Shantice. Don't let the others give you the truth was the switch tip for yesterday. And, whew, that was kind of big. Yeah. Don't let the others give you the truth. You know, she started off with, you know, I can't stand that terminology, that saying, my truth. Yeah. You know, your truth is not always the right thing. And when we start passing over that truth, yeah, you may not be getting the best, because most times someone's truth is just that, their truth. It's not the truth. And the one thing that I love about God, his truth is really what will set you free. His truth is the thing that makes the difference. His truth is unbiased. His truth is impartial. His truth is just that. It is what it is. And he doesn't care about who's right or who's wrong. God is not an emotional God. God is not a, you know, a being that's going to be, you know, twisted when things don't go his way. You know, he's not going to pick favorites. Yeah. So you don't want someone else to give you the truth. You don't want their truth. You want God's truth. And when you choose people to hang around with, when you choose people, you know, when you're choosing that person, you know, we talk about those signs that you're in a rare relationship that lasts a lifetime. That's when a person is giving you God's truth. And I'm giving you their truth. So, hey, you're on to something big. All right? So please, don't step over in that zone. You want to be on the Lord's side with his truth, okay? Go back and listen to yesterday's switch tip for yourself. Shanti says it best. Why? Because it's her tip that she gets from God. I can only give you a recap. All right? All right. Well, today is Let's Talk About It Tuesday Church Folk Day. Yes, yes, yes. We're here. And I don't know about this news I got today. I wasn't jumping up and down over it last night. So I'm hoping that the Due Time crew turns it up. Because I need them to turn it up for me. All right? All right. And maybe you can help turn it up for me too. So we're going to take that time to go get that healthy breakfast. Go tell somebody that it's Due Time with Pastor Steph is on. And whatever you do, don't go anywhere, because we will be right back.
According to a recent survey by the American Optometric Association, more than half of Americans and 4 out of 5 children use electronic devices for 3 or more hours per day. And those statistics will only increase. March is Save Your Vision Month, and the American Optometric Association wants you to see well into the future. It's more important than ever to make sure your family members receive yearly comprehensive eye exams from your local eye doctor. Protect your eye health in the 21st century. Visit AOA.org to learn more.
Good morning and good morning again. Welcome back to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. And it's Let's Talk About It Tuesday Church Folk Day. Yes, we've gotten underway. And I'm looking forward to a good day. I'm looking forward to a good day. Are you? Are you going to help me have a good Tuesday? I really hope so. Because I don't know what we're talking about today. I don't know. I got some stuff here. But I need you to help me turn it up. Because I'm not too excited about it. But while I pull it up, I couldn't find anything really good yesterday. You know, sometimes the news is like jumping, and then other times it's like, all right. So let's see what's on the radar this morning. What are we talking about? Well, I came across a little article here. And it was about some former inmates. And they say they are holding nothing back about what it's really like in jail. Now, I thought this was kind of interesting because, you know, Brother Al is always talking about send him somebody to go visit Big Bubba. And, you know, we've been talking about a lot of crime. And, you know, we look at TV or movies and we see what they say it's like to be in jail. But if you haven't spoken to a person who's been in jail, you really don't know what it's like. You can only go by what, you know, what TV shows you, you know, it's like, or movie shows you it's like. And, you know, remember, like, last year and 22, there was a lot of conversation about Rikers Island, a lot of conversation about what was going on over there. Yeah, we had a lot of news stories about a lot of people dying over there. A lot of the conditions, you know, were really bad. And this one came up on my radar, and I was like, you know what, it's Let's Talk About It Tuesday, so let's hear about what it's like according to the inmates. Well, he's once says, I spent 8 months in county jail prior to going to prison. And that's something, that's, you know, have you ever heard somebody say, that ain't prison, that's jail? Listen, it's all the same to me. When you behind the bars, you behind bars. I ain't working with no terminology. But anyway, they say I spent 8 months in county jail before going to prison, and I thought I knew what to expect. But the first day in prison was one of the worst days of my life. The trip was excruciating. Fully shackled for more than 9 hours and chained to another woman. Wow, okay, so we're getting to see what it's like from a woman's eyes. We were black boxed, which caused the handcuffs to painfully dig into our wrists. No toilet breaks, and after a few hours, you feel like your bladder is going to explode, and you cannot do anything but hope not to pee yourself, which would make the situation even more miserable. After 9 hours sitting on hard seats, everything hurts. Your back and neck muscles, shackles burning your wrists and ankles. A couple of girls got car sick and threw up all over themselves. Someone else peed on herself. It was pure hell. Once we finally arrived, we were processed and treated like a bunch of cattle. It was intimidating, scary, and overwhelming. Wow. Wow. Well, you know what? Pastor Steph would be jacked up. Because I always got to go to the bathroom. Yeah. Ain't no way in the world I could hold it that long. I'd be that one who didn't pee herself. Wow. Okay. I ain't think about that one. All right, another story. Without exception, the food is terrible. Mush that has been boiled all day and slopped without a care onto a tray. If you get lucky and it's cake night, it is guaranteed that some of the hot course mush will have dribbled into your cake, which isn't even really cake, but just bread that's cut into pieces instead of slices. They claim we'd get 800 calories a day, but I'll be damned if that math is right. If you don't have money for commissary or the lockdown prevents you from making store, you are hungry, bottom line. The kitchen prison, I've only ever seen one, so maybe others are different, consisted of a giant metal vats that stayed stirring themselves all day. The cooks would open bag after bag of whatever and dump it into those vats to be boiled. Once in a blue moon, you would get some chicken or something that had to be actually cooked. And that was the worst because you never knew if it was going to make you sick or not. Some nights, you could hear the retching echoing throughout the building, and you'd be praying that your peace was sound. Pretty disgusting. You know, that is disgusting, actually. I never understood why. Why they feed people like that? Why? I know, you know, we talk about some of the heinous stuff people do. But is that like vengeance? When we say we just going to feed them anything, you know, when we feel like we not even going to cook them a decent meal. You know, and I get it. I get it. I get it. Some of these news stories, it's like, die already. But I don't know. You know, it's Let's Talk About It Tuesday. I'm thinking about this thing, and I'm reading this, and it's like my heart is saying, is that our job? Not to even feed you. Wow. I don't know. You know, I'm actually teary-eyed right now. And I'm telling you, the stuff that we read, it's like, maybe you're better off dead. I don't know. It's always noisy 24/7. Your body cavities will be searched. The other inmates will try to steal everything you have. Guards may treat you in gross manner. The best part of you ran down your mother's leg. Mm. Communication with loved ones is greatly reduced. No matter what is cooked, the food tastes the same every day. Your habits, sugar, caffeine, alcohol, nicotine, go unsatisfied. You won't be able to choose your favorite TV show. You will walk through the prison unit in a single file, looking straight ahead. You will hear metal gates, doors slamming and clanking inside the building. If you work in the field, you will be on your feet in the sun all day long. The guards watching you will be nearby and irritated by the heat, but sitting on their horses. Many units have no AC. The commode has no seat. You will sit on metal and share the cell with another. Many units have tanks where the men live together. Some overcrowded units have their inmates living in tents in Texas. This can be life-threatening. Some inmates are armed with shanks, homemade knives. You will never have enough money to buy little goodies you desire at the commissary. Mm. Wow. Wow. I tell you, this is giving me a whole different perspective. And that person, you know, this person wrote, it's line by line. It's not even in a paragraph. I got a comment from a listener. Can't make it comfortable for them. Why feed them something outside in the world will consider luxury? Okay. Okay. I don't know, y'all. My heart, this thing is grabbing me here. All right. There are times you can busy yourself with chores of the day and kind of forget or put things off. But for the most part, for me, it was brutal and devastating. I watched my late teens, 20s, and 30s vanish as I struggled to survive inside. I've seen more violence than the vast majority of the planet, and it was my day-to-day life. The stress can be overwhelming at times, and other times, it is just plain excruciating, boring. I hope no one has to experience what I went through for over 25 years. It wiped me out, defeated me time and again, crushed my spirit and the will to live over and over again, and I still am not certain how I made it. This is getting to me, y'all. This is getting to me. This is getting to me. I don't know. Somebody... You know, I got a hit from somebody, you know, that's the, you know, the way, you know, one person sees it. Hit me up. Let me know what you thinking. Because, you know, we talk about crime on this broadcast day in and day out. And, you know, how sorry can you feel, you know, for these people? You know, this person just got finished saying, their teens, their 20s, and their 30s vanished as I struggled to survive inside. Spent 25 years. That means that he or she had to do something that was so bad that they spent 25 years in jail and the younger part of their life in jail. And this is something we talk about all the time when we talk about, you know, does the punishment fit the crime? You know, where you did something as a teen and, you know, they sentenced you and you did something as a teen that you need to spend like 30, 40, 50 years up in there. But then you hear this, and I don't know, y'all. This is like I'm ready to burst into tears. And you know what? I need to be thinking about this stuff when I'm reading some of this stuff that we read. And I'm sure I'm going to read some of this when we get into the 7:30 hour. Who's talking to me here? All right. Sounds like people take matters into their own hands when it comes to how they treat the inmates. It does. It really does. It's like when I think about like food, you know, like the person just said, you know, can't make them comfortable, you know, and we think about what's the opposite side of, you know, we always say, well, you know what, we don't want to sentence people to death because that's not up to us. But then, you know, what should they live like? What should they live like on the inside? When you do something and they don't give you the death penalty, you know, some of those, sometimes if you plead down, you know, they give you life without parole. They don't give you the death penalty. And this is what, you know, it sounds like. This is what it looks like. Oh, my gosh. All right, here we go. This might seem strange, but pay attention. Do not point. No pointing with your fingers. Don't point at the sky, the ground, the guy getting killed over yonder, the inmate escaping over the kill fence. Don't point ever. The reason is simple. That probably innocent gesture of yours can and will be taken so out of context by everyone inside the walls. All of them will be certain you are pointing at, thus talking about and discussing that inmate. And you will swiftly get your, I don't even know what this word is, if you will, for that terrible misdeed. I've never seen this word before. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Comeuppance? I don't even know what that means. But I guess, you know, that means you really gonna get it on the inside. Okay. Somebody just wrote in, I feel bad for these people. We as Christians are supposed to lift them up regardless. Yes, they did their crime, but if God can forgive them, so should we. Okay. Am I hearing some compassion get leaked through here? All right. You can't sleep. Lack of heat or air makes it so uncomfortable in both winter and summer. You can't have peace due to constant noise and lights. You can't think straight because of loud, disrespectful idiots. You can't get access to halfway decent meals, so you can't maintain a healthy weight. You can't manage your emotions, so you shut them off and essentially die while you're there, so you don't have to feel the loss of humanity while you're there. All right, somebody else is talking to me here. Let's see what they say. Jail is supposed to help them appreciate to see what a good life they had before they came in. If you ever look at our kids' school, looks just like a jail set up, especially the lunchroom. Okay. I mean, I get it. I definitely get it. I do. Again, you know, we talk about, you know, what it's like for you to commit this crime. For you, you look at the ones who let the dog maul the little girl yesterday, you know, ripped her whole scalp out. And then I hear this. Just pretend like it was one of those people So the mama, who tried to hide the clothes, you know, that the little girl was wearing when she was mauled, and she goes to jail and she writes one of these things here. Or the one who was already in trouble because he had, like, the bad dog, and then that same dog is what ripped the scalp off the little girl. He's writing one of these. Believe it or not, many inmates are just like you and don't want to fight. During my last incarceration, I'm going to put some emphasis on that, I made it without fighting once. Granted, it was only a year, but I still made it without fighting. Let me be clear, though. Not fighting is not the same as being willing to fight. I was well aware that if called out, I must fight. If I didn't, then I would be considered weak and ostracized by almost everyone. It's very hard to do time in prison, especially if you are a first-timer. You have to worry about guards and your fellow inmates. Learn the routine and the penalties if you don't, and deal with the fact that the you is gone. Staff doesn't consider you human, and inmates always have a game going. The strong prey on the weak and ignorant. Then there is just the time itself. How long are you in for? 3, 5, 10, 20? It's hard, but sit back and really think about that amount of time. The entire world in general can turn upside down in just a few years. I've known people who've never seen a legal cell phone. Your kids grow up, your spouse might well move on, and people die. Prison sucks, but in some ways, it's like being stuck in time. Inside, nothing major changes from day to day, but the world moves on without you. I don't see how lifers do it, to be honest. Wow. Wow. Let's read one more. To some people, it's probably pretty hard being away from everything you know and love. For me, being out is harder, than being in. I have days where I crave the inside. It's easier than living out here as a second-class citizen. I have been out of lockup for 7 years and have yet to find a job that I can perform and make a living off of. I cannot find decent housing for myself, and if it weren't for my dad and my son, I would be on the streets committing crimes just to eat. So how hard is it really to do time in prison? That's a cakewalk compared to living in society as a convicted felon. This is how I see it anyway. Not everybody will have the same opinion. Woo! You know, last week we talked about, remember we did, I think it may have even been Tuesday. No, not Tuesday, because I was sick Tuesday. May have even been, like, it was maybe Thursday. I did the story where you only get $40 to come out, and they're trying to increase it to $400-something a month for the very thing this person just got finished talking about. They said that, you know, it's not enough to eat. They want to give you money for housing, transportation, food. And we were talking about that, how we felt about them getting $400-something a day after they've committed crimes. Man, I have to tell you, I don't know about y'all. this has definitely given me a different perspective on, you know, a lot of things. Somebody writes, imagine the prisons in the foreign countries who are treated worse than the prisons out here. They are tortured and some just don't eat anything. It's true. I know somebody who, this woman, she was on crack. And she tried to smuggle some drugs. I think it was out of Jamaica. Yeah, I think it was out of Jamaica. And she got caught. And she had to go to jail over there. And she was telling us about what the jails are like there. And like this person, you know, like the listener just said, you know, what I'm reading right here is life stuff. Because they really suffer over there. Well, a lot of places, a lot of times in these foreign countries, you don't live well on the outside. Look at how they're clamoring to be over here. And now go on the inside where they really don't care nothing about you. I don't know. You know, like I said, you know, definitely this has given me just something to visualize. I know some people who have just gone in and out of jail like it's in and out the bathroom. Somebody just wrote, how tragic, but this is the picture we need to present to our young people who think doing a crime is okay, but never think of the punishment and consequences. How sad. That's right, and that's what I was thinking. That's what I was just thinking. How many of our kids need to hear this? I agree. How many of our kids need to hear this? You know, when, you know, they're out here committing crimes and they're not thinking about what it's like on the inside. They're thinking, you know, it's, you know, I could do it. You know, I could do my time. Yeah. Talk to some of these people. Because I'm going to be honest, even in the Scared Straight, you know, when you see those, remember we used to look at the Scared Straight programs and, you know, all the guys, they'd be yelling through the windows trying to, you know, intimidate and scare the kids as they walking through. And can I be honest? I used to look at that show, this here, what I just got finished reading, I can honestly tell you, when I would watch that show and the kids be going through and they be sitting there trying to be all bad and tough and all that kind of stuff, and you have the guys yelling, or you have them kind of coming through and, you know, each of them take a turn and they talk, can I tell you? Not one of those ever hit me like I just got finished reading here. Not one of them. I am really ready to just, like, cry. And I'm saying to myself, you know, we cry for, when we, you know, for the stories that we hear, whether you're looking at it on TV, they're seeing it on the news, whether you're reading the news, whether you're hearing about it and we're discussing it. You know, it's like it brings you to tears, some of the stuff that we, you know, especially when it comes to the kids. But this is like, yo, maybe if some adults heard this, they wouldn't want to go to jail. Because this here, can I tell you something? This is worse than hearing about Big Bubba. If Al's depiction of Big Bubba is worse than this, this hit me harder. So let's hear about some of this crime. What are we talking about today? My heart is hurting, y'all. My heart is hurting. Well, talk about crying. I've been seeing this story, actually. There's this young man. He's a former college football player. He's 25 years old. And he accidentally shot his mother over the weekend, thinking she was an intruder trying to break into their house. So, Jalen Johnson They say thought his mother was an intruder when she entered the back door of their home in St. Louis, 7:30 in the morning. And he kept the gun in the house for protection, they say, after he was robbed at gunpoint. And his mother was 56 years old. And unfortunately, when he shot her, she died right there. And he's been charged with manslaughter and armed criminal action. And his bail was set at $100,000. Now, they say he cannot stop crying. Well, I'm sure if he honestly shot his mom by mistake, you know, now I don't know how he shot mom by mistake, whether he said something and mom didn't answer. But I'm going to tell you something. I can't even imagine what life is going to be like for him. Because if he's going to experience anything, like we just got finished talking, like we just got finished reading, man, you already mourning the loss of your mama. Period, period, period. You already mourning the loss of your mother. And then you really can't get out your head that you're the one that just killed your mama by mistake. And now you're going to have to go through some of this stuff that we just got finished reading about. Oh, Lord. Can you imagine? Oh, my goodness gracious. This is going to be some kind of journey. Wow. All righty. This here. This here is a story. But before I get to that, there's a piece of advice that I want to make sure that you all get. I don't know why this is hitting me like I've read this or heard about this before, but it's definitely worth me giving you all. So there's this woman who went to check into a hotel, and she had an experience, and she wants everybody to know that you need to protect yourself. So she said she was traveling, and she checked into a hotel. And when she checked into the hotel, she said the counter person, the person at the counter, the desk attendant, I'm sorry, I couldn't think of his name. The desk attendant went to slide her key across the table, the counter, and said, okay, your room is 935. And she says, if you are to experience that, make sure you ask for another room and ask that your room number not be shouted out loud. Yeah, and I've heard this before, a long, long time ago. And, I mean, you really don't have to explain why, but it's Let's Talk About It Tuesday, so we're going to talk about this thing. You know, there's people in the lobby, and she brings up the fact that not only are there people in the lobby that are, you know, other people who are renting rooms, there are also people in the hotel lobby that are stragglers and people who don't mean you no good. And it's bad enough they already see you checking in and you can't help that. But surely you shouldn't allow them to, you know, say your room number out loud and you not get another room because it's dangerous. And they have several comments from hospitality managers who co-sign on the fact that, hey, if someone hands you your key and says your room number out loud, immediately get another room, because that's the first thing they're trained not to do. Yeah. And that's coming from a hospitality supervisor. There's another person that says, as a former hotel general manager, please request a new room, because they should not say your room number out loud, and make sure to report them to the nearest manager. And another person says, former front desk agent here, they should never say your room number out loud. She's absolutely right. Change it right then and there. Wow. Somebody says, years ago, I once repeated my room number out loud, and the clerk immediately was like, nope, we're going to change that. Wow. So that's just, you know, a warning, food for thought, travel, you know, 101. Make sure that when you get your hotel room, it's, you know, in that little, you know, they give it to you in the little thing, envelope, and just let them slide it to you. They don't need to be talking about it. All righty. Well, speaking of travel, oh, my goodness gracious. You know, I tell you, when you travel, you better pray and ask God for traveling mercies. They've got this story where these two pilots were on an Indonesian flight round trip. So here's how the story goes. These two pilots were set to take this round trip. One would go one way and one would fly the opposite way. They were both pilots. It wasn't no, you know, one less than the other and all of this, you know, big stuff or whatever. They were both pilots. All right? So on the way, on the first leg of the trip, pilot number one says to pilot number two, all right, I'm a little tired, so can I get some sleep going, and I take a nap, and you take the first leg, and I'll take the second leg. So he says, okay, no problem. So he says, all right, I wake up, I look over, I say, you know what, I'm good, you good, flight goes on. On the way back, they do the same thing, but in reverse. So now pilot number two says to pilot number one, okay. Now they call them pilot in command and second in command. So pilot in command then says to second in command, all right, you know what? I'm tired. Can I take a nap? And he goes, okay, no problem. So they do just that. So when he wakes up, he asks, are you good? You flying the plane? You good? He goes, yeah, I'm good. He goes back to sleep. Well, when he wakes up, he realizes that they're not on the flight course that they need to be. Why? Because the pilot in command is sleeping. So for over 20 minutes, they were both asleep. Oh, my good Lord. They were both asleep. Can I say this again? They were both asleep. Now, they say that each time before they fly, they're supposed to check themselves for illness, impairing meds, stress, alcohol, fatigue, and their emotional state before flying. Before flying, y'all. Well, they didn't do that. Because what happened was, one that fell asleep and then went back to sleep, he says he's got a set of twins, a brand new set of twins at home. And when he should have been sleeping, he had to wake up in the middle of the night so that he could help. He says, I had to wake up several times to help care for the children. And he felt his quality had degraded, but with the fact that he was going to swap the sleeping ability with the other pilot, he thought he was okay. So for 20 minutes, they were off course, y'all. Thank you, Jesus. They were able to get back on course. Now, how did they find out? Because during the time they were sleeping, and we did a story like this before, during the time they were sleeping, the command post was trying to get in touch with them and nobody was answering. So that's how they found out that they were sleeping. And they saw that they were off course. And they were trying to get in touch with them, but they were asleep. So that's why they couldn't get in touch with them. So they're both suspended. And they're doing some investigating. But, I mean, the biggest part of the investigation, they didn't lie. They didn't lie. They told the truth. They were both tired. And the one who should have been awake on the go back was not able to stay awake because he was tending to his babies. Oh, Lord have mercy, Lord. This is, you know, we put our hands in the hands, but I tell you, at the end of the day, we really don't put our hands in the hands of the man. We put our hands in the man, in the creator, because I'm telling you something. How many other times has this happened and nobody knows? And they were saying that this particular airline, they don't have the backup that they should, because there are other airlines that have different protocols for long flights. So, like, if it's this amount of hours, there are these many people, these many pilots on board. I'm trying to see what they were saying. They gave some type of, here they go. Flight under 8 hours, 2 pilots. 8 to 12 hours, 3 pilots. Over 12 hours, 4 pilots. So at all times, there's backup. Well, everything except for under 8 hours, where there are only 2 pilots. And clearly, having only 2 pilots is simply not enough. So this is what we're talking about here. Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, I don't even know what we're going to talk about with the Due Time crew, because there was only one Due Time crew member on when we were talking about the main thing. And, what are we going to say about the people that went to sleep? They shouldn't have a job. Should they go to jail? For putting everybody's life at risk. It was 150 people on that flight. So for 20 minutes while you were off course, if you had run on course to someone that on someone else's course, could have been 150 people dead, plus y'all. I don't know. When you suspend them, what do you do? Maybe that's the question. Where's my due time crew? Maybe that's the question that I'll ask. Where's my Pastor Jeff? Good morning, Pastor Jeff.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. Pastor Jeff, we got two pilots that went to sleep. They're supposed to check in. Each pilot is supposed to check in for, hold on, let me say it again. They're supposed to check in for, hold on. I want to get it right. They're supposed to check in for alcohol, sleep, and all of that kind of stuff. Well, they did, excuse me, but subsequently ended up going to sleep because they thought that the other one was going to have the back, and they didn't. So they suspended them. What do you think? Should suspension be enough for them?
Well, here's the thing. That could have ended up in total tragedy. So
absolutely.
I put a penalty should be greater, but at the same time, with the shortage of pilots, you know, can you really have the penalty greater? Because they, you know, there's a shortage, and you know, it's like the correction officers. Can you imagine if they start just firing them for every little thing, you know? And now you got the inmates running wild because you don't have nobody to watch you. So,
mm-hmm.
I personally, you know, I feel it should be severe because you have people's lives in your hands over your twin baby sleeping. You know, I mean, waking you up. Listen, y'all hire a maid or something. Or maybe the job or to give them some money to hire somebody, you know, take care of those screaming babies, you know. But you got to be on point with that job, you know, so. That's all I got to say about that.
Absolutely. So you have no penalty in mind?
I mean, my penalty would be you're fired because you could have killed everybody, but I'm looking at the other side of the coin, the shortage of pilots. You know, give them another chance because nobody died, but if people would have died, they would have been dead. As well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wouldn't know what to do in a situation like that.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's talk to Pastor KL and see if he has an idea of what should be done. Good morning, Pastor KL.
Good morning, Pastor Steph. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. I am well. You got these two pilots that went to sleep behind the wheel, if you will. They say that the pilot's supposed to have a personal checklist that they actually have to go through before they get on this plane to fly, and they're supposed to check themselves for illness, impairing meds, stress, alcohol, fatigue, and their emotional state before flying. Well, this particular pilot ended up falling asleep because, you know, he had been up. He had to get up and handle the care of his brand-new infant twins. He had to help with them, which meant that he didn't have enough sleep. And they ended up going off course. Well, they suspended the both of them. Is suspension sufficient? If not, what should it be?
Well, first of all, I'm kind of appalled. You know, I travel a lot myself. And to know that, you know what I mean, these two up there sleeping, you know, that I don't want to be in the air as it is. let alone someone who's sleeping at the wheel. You know, I think somebody, you know, one of the travelers need to go and knock on the door every 20 minutes. Hey, y'all all right in there? You know, just to make sure that everything is good. Somebody has to be accountable for that. But I think they should be fired. You know, no suspension. I mean, you didn't get lucky. You know what I'm saying? God just covered you. You know, so no. I think, what, we're going to allow them to do it again? I don't think that's a pretty good idea. And then I also asked, well, you know, because Pastor Jeff said there's not enough pilots, but how hard is it to fly if you can sleep and the plane's still going? I mean, I'm just trying to say, are you really doing that much work? You're just putting us down and picking us up. So I can fly for you if you want me to. And that's all I'm saying.
Well, speaking of which, they say the cockpit of the plane is supposed to be checked every half hour. But after the investigation took place, they found that something actually went wrong with that as well. They put it, absence of detailed procedures. So my thing is, do the flight attendants get fired? Because when I read this last night, I'm like, well, that's the same thing I thought. I'm like, well, y'all don't check. Y'all don't see if they need water, coffee, need a bathroom break. Y'all don't check for none of that. So clearly, that to me, that was kind of a weak way of saying that the flight attendants weren't doing their job. When you saw an absence of detailed procedures, cut it out. If you're saying that it's supposed to be every half hour, they either did the job or they didn't do the job, the same way the two was up in the cockpit sleeping. So everybody need to be fired. Because what were y'all doing? This was the first flight y'all had ever been on to Indonesia also? I don't know. Let's see what Shanti's got to say. I don't know, y'all. Shanti's always says that nobody want to do their job. Good morning, Shanti's.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Happy
That's
I'm traveling
good.
On foot, ain't I?
how safe is that these days? So, what
right.
do you think is the recourse, you know, for this here, sleeping at the wheel?
Well, I think the first problem is they check themselves. How do you do that? How do I check myself? When I, as soon as you said that, it made me think of, I know that, like, the train operators, they're mandated to get at least 8 hours of sleep. So what MTA tries to do is, I know a lot of the times you can't leave unless you get a relief, but they factor in the shift that you're already scheduled on, the schedule for that you're working, they factor in your travel times, I guess they monitor where you live, your travel time to and from work. So they'll say, okay, you need such and such amount of hours in between each shift, because between the time you need to sleep and the time you need to travel, you need to be effective when you're driving this train. So how am I now checking myself? Am I really going to go to work and say, you know what, I was supposed to get 9 hours of sleep. I only ended up getting 6. So I'm going to just check this not sufficient enough to fly this plane, and I'm going to just go back home. That's the first problem in my head, right? Now, I'm you relying on your partner to be up, and I've been in a car like that before. I've been in a car with someone, and I'm in the passenger seat, and I'm like, yo, you good? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, you sure? Because I'm not good. I'm tired. I'm going to sleep. And the next thing I knew, I was awakened by the sound of us kind of scraping the side rails. And when I opened my eyes, you leaning back up because you done fell asleep. Whoa, somebody done lied here. Now, I know it wasn't me because I told you I wasn't good. That's why I'm in the passenger seat. If you knew you weren't good, we're not above pulling over and going to sleep. And calling someone and asking someone, yo, call me in 20, 30 minutes. I'm pulled over here, watch my location, da da da. It's like no one is taking the necessary precautions. I say everybody who failed, starting with the pilots who lied to themselves and each other about how good they were going to be with being on point, everybody should get fired. And I agree with Pastor KL. Who cares about shortage if everybody going to die because everybody falling asleep? There's going to be a real shortage in pilots when everybody's dead. Not enough pilots in here. So, you know, it's crazy. It's like no one cares enough. Like, you don't even care to have enough integrity for the passengers. That's crazy.
Yeah, this is dangerous. This is dangerous, and you know, again, you know, I agree. You know, you're supposed to be, you know, checking yourself for, you know, meds and fatigue and, you know, all alcohol and all of this kind of stuff. And you know, I don't know. I don't know how you check yourself for those things either. You know, but again, right. This is when it's left up to us. This is when it's left up to us. You know, I want to go back a little bit. Thank you so much. And I want to go back a little bit. I want to go back to, this was not supposed to be our conversation, but I want to go back to where we started. You know, for the first 15 minutes of the hour of the show, I always do, you know, health tip or something like that. Today I did something a little different. Read what the former inmates are saying what jail is really like, and we read that. Before we read that, there was a comment from a listener. We were talking about making sure that you know, when you check into a hotel, you make sure they don't say your room number out loud. If they do, make sure you ask for another room immediately. And the next time they don't say your room out loud, make sure you tell them why you're asking for another room, because you said my room number out loud and I would like more privacy. Someone wrote in, I hate when they count your money out loud and say your name in the bank. Yeah, well, I would too.
Who's
that? I mean, who's counting my money out loud? No, let me go to the ATM. It's safer. The ATM don't talk. Yo, really? I would too. You ain't got to be that efficient. You got to count my money out loud. Mm-mm. Count it in front of me. If you count it, I can count it with you. You just stay behind that glass and you be quiet. Wow. Mm-mm. All right. Well, Pastor Jeff and Pastor KL were not on, and Shantisha, you weren't on live. We weren't talking. But I want to hear what the men have to say. You know, thank you all of my loyal listeners, as Vivian calls you. Thank you for, you know, your feedback. And feel free to continue to converse with me, because I still got some stories we're talking about today regarding our prisoners, what they say about prison. Oh, all right, here we go. I don't know how many more accounts we have, but we got enough here. All right, gentlemen and lady. Some prison no-nos in no particular order. Don't borrow anything you can't pay back on your next trip to the store commissary. Related to the above, don't create debt you can't pay. If you don't pay in money, you'll pay in blood or worse. Still related, don't gamble unless you can pay. Don't cheat at cards. Someone is going to notice and you'll be sorry. Don't disrespect other inmates, especially don't emasculate another inmate if you're a guy. Don't be dirty. Wash your hands, brush your teeth, shower, and keep your cell clean. Related to the above, when you brush your teeth, don't spit in the sink, spit in the toilet. Don't steal from another inmate ever. Better yet, don't even touch something that isn't yours. You can sit on someone's bunk if invited, but don't sit on their pillow. Don't snitch. In fact, keep your interactions with the correctional officers and prison staff within earshot of other inmates whenever possible. Mind your own business. Don't see anything. Don't know anything. Don't forget to keep your back to a wall or watch it if you can't. Don't brag about your case or your appeal or your imminent release. Don't pry into others' business or cases. Listen, but limit asking unless they seek your input. Don't talk about anyone else's business or cases to anyone else. Don't hit a CO. They'll hit you back, all 12 plus of them, repeatedly, and you'll likely fall a few times on your way to the hole. Don't back-to-back your phone calls. Hit your limit. Get to the back of the queue. Don't back down from a fight or accept disrespect. You'll be the resident punching bag from that day forward. Whew, that's a whole lot of rules. Oh, my gosh. All right, here's another one. A lot of it has to do with the individual. The one who goes to prison and accepts that they are in prison will do better. They get into a prison routine. They stay busy and focused on things that have to do with their life in prison. This helps the time go by faster. Those who go to prison and are constantly thinking about the free world, who constantly complain about prison rules, etc., will make their time harder. Just about every prisoner talks about how bad the food is or stupid prison rules, but most do not do it all the time. The quicker you accept the fact of where you are, the better it will be. All right, we got one more, so I'm just going to go ahead and finish this, and then we're going to chat a little bit. Hold on. It is absolutely the most extreme of both ends of the spectrum. It is the easiest, least stressful, least demanding, lowest achievement level, nothing to do, mindless waste of time ever. However, at the very same time, it is the most stressful, dangerous, demanding, difficult, hard, complicated, and skill-demanding thing you may ever do. How can it be both? It's all easy when things are going well. It's good when the yard is calm, when things are going as they are routinely done. Nothing changes. Every day is the same. It is the hardest when things go sideways, when there is inmate strife or you cross an uncrossable line. Nowhere is safe, calm, or convenient. You might need protection. Just hit the head. Oh, I'm sorry. You might need protection just to hit the... Oh, I said it right. Just to hit the head. Mealtime can be very dangerous. Ask an inmate for an upper-level joint. It's all good right up to when it's not. Then it is ugly, scary, and chaotic. Prison is not a fun place to be. It's a boring, unstructured place to waste half a lifetime, or it's a dangerous hellhole where you are just trying to survive the next few minutes. So those are just a few that we've read at this part of the show. And, you know, I don't know. Pastor Jeff, you're the only one here who said you've been on both sides of the fence. You know, the inmates are talking about what life is really like. They're like, well, you know what, if you think TV or the movies tell the story, we're here to tell the real, true Hollywood story. Is this an accurate depiction? Is the movie and TV depiction inaccurate? Does it show too much? Does it not show enough? What's your thought?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Because I can't find my phone. And I thought I had it on mute. I got my ear thing there. Why are you laughing?
Because of you. Can you hear me? Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, my thoughts on it, that all the rules that you read are correct. You know, I've experienced it, and I've broken some, and, you know, but, you know, the grace of God, I didn't pay the price I was supposed to pay for breaking some of them rules. I mean, you know, it's more rules in there than it is out here, believe it or not. And it's amazing to me how you can get a bunch of outlaws to want to put all these rules on you, but when they're outside, they don't abide by none of the rules out here.
Mm.
You know?
Wow.
But
that's something to think about.
What specific, like, you want to know concerning that, though? You know? Like...
No, you know, nothing in specific. Just, again, this is an ex-inmate's depiction. You know, the premise was, okay, so what you see on TV, what you see in the movies, that's how they start the article, you know, is what you see on TV or in the movies as accurate as a real inmate can tell the story. And, you know, we read some things and, you know, it's eye-opening, you know, if you will. And just wanting to know as a person, you know, as a – I can't ask Pastor Kale and Shantice the same question, but, you know, is this more of a depiction – is this more of a depiction of what real life is on the inside than what you see on TV?
It actually depends on what level of yard that they have you on. You know, they group people by, you know, their severity of their crime. And I was only in there 45 days, you know, actual prison 45 days. So, but I was at the lowest level you could be. And at that level, I saw a lot of, you know, it was a lot of danger, you know, so I could imagine at the other levels how bad it really is and how much more you have to abide by the rules.
Wow.
You know, I was on the yard and, you know, bullets start flying over my head at level one. So I can imagine, you know, the other levels, how severe it is. But I, you know, glad I didn't experience it, you know. But I mean, is it like on TV? A lot of TV usually show you the extreme of stuff that normally doesn't happen.
Okay.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was in a few riots, and I've seen people get thrown. You know. Off of the tier.
I can
imagine, you know. I mean, I tried to keep a group of people from throwing somebody off, but they didn't listen to me. They said, "Preacher, don't sit down. Mind your business and listen." You know? and I went and mind my business because I couldn't say anything because I was the peacemaker in there because I had the title preacher. You know, I used that title to get me through. It was my money card. You know?
Okay.
You know, I got saved again once I got in and pulled that title up. You know, resurrected that title. So.
Wow. Oh, well, you know, thank you for always being very transparent. If like you said, if all of this was going on level one, goodness gracious, I would not want to know what happens in other areas of this system. Oh my goodness, Pastor KL, you know, you missed some of the other descriptions that we read earlier. You know, but as you read, as you hear, even this little last piece. we were talking about, okay, so when we're talking about, you know, does the punishment fit the crime and, you know, people going on the inside and you hear, you know, stuff like what you're talking about, what Pastor Jeff is describing and you hear what we just got finished reading. What do you think about, you know, this thing in jail? Do you think, okay, well, you know what, good for you, you know, this is what you get. This is what jail should be about for you. You know, there was a depiction of the food and how bad the food is. Do you think that, you know what, that's what you deserve? You don't deserve to eat anything decent. You know, what's your thought?
Well, I mean, so a lot of things. I mean, that last list that you just read, you know, if I be honest with the way I grew up, you know, that's out here on the street, too. The rules have changed. You know, it's just that there, they make you abide by it. You know, here we got to catch you if you mess up, if you will. You know, but it's the same rules inside and outside. You know, just, again, inside, they're going to make you abide by it. You know what I mean? That's pretty much the difference. Outside, they're going to make you abide by it when I catch you. So you can get away with it for a while, you know, but sooner or later it'll catch up to you. In prison, no, they don't catch you because they know where you are. So, you know, you have to be a little bit more to what's going on because there's no running. But I don't see where the rules of that much change. Listen, I've seen, as Pastor Jeff said, I've seen bullets go across my head outside. You know, I've not been in prison. I've been in jail, but I've not been in prison. But I don't really see the difference. Now, the eating definitely is different. But, you know, this is where you decided you wanted to live. And the reason why I say that is because you knew that the things you've done out here would eventually, or if you got caught, this is where you live. So this is where you wanted to pay your month's rent and your month's security. You know, you decided that this was the better place for you. So now you have to eat. Listen, if I don't get EBT or if I don't have a job, I got to eat whatever in the refrigerator. Guess what? That's in the refrigerator.
Okay, interesting.
You know, I want to talk about that food. some of the best food I got was in there. Okay, you know, you got some cooks in there now, and you know, depends on your assignment. I was a inmate firefighter, so we were fed some good food, you know, a lot of times, and you know, we were out there helping the white rich folks keep their houses from burning down, you know, in California there, you know. So,
wow.
You know, some of that food it depends on where you are. If you want to talk about bad food, you know, a lot of those people come in there and ain't never ate that good. You know?
Wow. Okay. So it is a depiction of it being, you know, sloppy, no taste. You know, how real is that then? As far as you know,
when I was in the jail in Arizona, you know, that prejudiced guy that ran that system, he put no seasoning and none in the food, and I lost 14 pounds in the 3 weeks that they had me locked up there. Okay, and they flew me to California. That food was, as soon as I hit the jail there, that food compared to what I was eating 3 weeks before, that food was so good.
I guess the
best
tasting
food I've had. So I don't know whether it was bad or not because it was so good after, you know, that Sheriff Arpaio, whatever his name was, did us in Arizona there. So, you know, I love the food. That was the best tasting food I ever had, I guess, when you're eating bad food. So it depends on
right. Where
you come from,
yeah.
Whether you're going to call it bad.
Okay, so we've always heard of the food being bad. When people talk about, you know, prison, jail, whatever, you know, they always talk about how bad, you know, the food is. So I'm going to read you this piece here. The kitchen in prison, I've only ever seen one, so maybe others are different, consisted of a giant metal vats that stayed stirring themselves all day. The cooks would open bag after bag of whatever and dump it into those vats to be boiled. Once in a blue moon, you would get some chicken or something that had to actually be cooked, and that was the worst because you never knew if it was going to make you sick or not. Some nights you could hear the retching echoing throughout the building, and you'd be praying that your peace was sound. Pretty disgusting. And that's like only part of what people have said. So here's my question to you all. You know, when you hear this type of depiction of what the food is like, what do you feel? Is this sufficient? Do you feel like, you know what, this is jail? Like Pastor KL said, this is what you've chosen. You've committed crimes and things like that to get yourself put in prison. So how they feed you is how they feed you. It's a part of the punishment. Or do you feel, hey, you know, it's food. You know, at least they could do is give you a decent meal. I always like to start with you, Pastor Jeff. You know, you said you went to this place where you lost, it was so bad you lost 14 pounds. But, you know, maybe the thought process was, well, you know what? You did the crime. This is part of your punishment. And it is what it is. How do you feel about that?
Well, I guess you might be talking to the wrong one because I did a lot of crimes in my life. But I actually went to jail for a crime I didn't commit. So the one time I get caught is when it was something I didn't do. And I'm still trying to, you know, clear my record of all of that, you know, which looks like it's about to happen. But so I, you know, you was punishing me severely, and I'm sitting there like, I didn't do this. You understand what I'm saying? And,
okay.
And, you know, so... My, you know, I'm gonna have mixed emotions on that. You know, I just knew you was gonna talk about the Bling Bishop this morning, though. You know.
Wait, you know I was gonna talk about the what?
The Bling Bishop that just got convicted.
Oh yeah, he's on my radar. He's on my radar. I just got stuck kind of here, you know. But he's on my radar. He's definitely here. So, yeah, he's here. I got the story. But before we get there, because we got some time. Before we get there. So forget about the time when you suffered when you didn't commit the crime, Pastor Jeff. When you hear the people who have committed crimes and you hear that they're complaining about, you know, the food is just terrible, you know, do you feel that's part and parcel of punishment, or you know what, it's food. We should at least feed them properly.
I guess I'm caught in the middle of that because I was in there with guys that, you know, committed some you know, I've listened to some of their stories and just be like, my goodness, y'all don't deserve anything. Y'all don't deserve to live. They support you every day that you're in here, you know. So it depends on the crime, you know, because, you know, the guys in there that mess with the little kids and do all the stuff like that, I don't think they should enjoy anything the rest of their life. You know, they lucky I'm not in charge of the punishment because they fool you. I would do them just like Sheriff Arpaio in Arizona was doing, you know. It would just be something that could keep you alive.
Oh my gosh!
It would be nothing you could enjoy.
Okay. Okay.
It depends on what you did.
All right. Pastor KL, are you where Pastor Jeff is, or you know what? At least we can feed him.
I'm with you know. At least you eating. like I said, you decided that you wanted to go there. You know, I remember those days as young, and you know, my mother and father used to cook something, and I didn't like what the warden was cooking. You know, I tried to protest against the warden, but the warden said, "Well, go to bed hungry." So I went to bed hungry. You know what I mean? So I don't understand what's the difference. And I did no crime. I just didn't like what they were producing that day, and I had to eat it. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Okay. Shantese.
The Lord got me being all noble. I feel like they should just get something that is edible. It doesn't have to be anything fancy, because considering where you are, like, come on, let's be for real. But you cannot now determine that you're going to make faultless food, or you're not going to thoroughly clean the chicken and thoroughly cook the chicken, because you figure, well, this is prison. They don't deserve anything good anyway. So it's like, if you're going to feed them, then give them something, you know, because I think it would just be a favor to not give them anything at all, you know, than to give them some bland food or uncooked, you know, because now we're taking matters into our own hands. We go back to that. We go back to now. You getting yourself in trouble with God because you're taking matters into your own hands because you don't feel like so-and-so deserves such and such. So if it's peanut butter and jelly every day, just make sure that bread is clean, that jelly is fine, there ain't nobody dying on your watch, and it's just peanut butter and jelly every day for the rest of your life, whatever. But we can't now, you know, like, oh, well, you in here for this, so now you're not, because now we're playing God. And this is the Holy Spirit speaking, because I was like, as I was listening, even earlier, past the steps to certain things, and, you know, you start to consider the news stories you hear and the crimes, especially when you think about what these parents are doing to these babies. And, you know, but we have to be real careful that we're not now playing God. So if you don't feed them, just give them the basics. You don't need no gourmet meal. You don't need, like, and I had someone in junior high school send me a picture of their lunch yesterday. So I had to ask if they were in jail. So I don't know if there's a swap going on or something, if the schools are now getting the jail menu. I don't know what's happening out here in the streets right now. But there just needs to be a thorough investigation as to who's eating what, because it just looks like everybody's getting thrown to the wolves, whether you're an adult in jail or whether you're a child going to school. Nobody's eating right now.
All righty. Thank you. All right. Well, I do have my Brooklyn preacher on the radar this morning, and I remembered when I pulled up the story last night that he was Pastor Jeff's favorite preacher in New York City. So we've got this Lamar Miller Whitehead, who was the one who was robbed while he was streaming live, and he claims it was $1 million that they stole. Well, he had to go to court, if you remember. We followed this story for a while as it was going on. He had to go to court because he was accused of some things. Well, he was found guilty of 5 counts after a trial that took place in Manhattan. They say that he is guilty of, let me just get to this here. They say he was the one who got the $90,000 out of his supposedly friend's mama, out of her retirement savings, when he promised to find her a house and he was going to invest the rest of her money into his real estate business. Well, she never got the house. Never got the investment. So he's found guilty on that. They say instead he spent the money on a luxury lifestyle and clothing. He was also accused and found guilty of trying to convince a businessman to lend him $500,000 and give him a stake in real estate deals because he was supposed to have these ties to the city and could get this man some money. But if you remember, part of the story was he threatened the man to give him the money. So he was found guilty on that. They say that he was also, they snagged him somehow on the fact that he had done quite a bit of what he was accused of, because he claimed he was buku buddies with Mayor Adams. And that he threw out there to get people to trust him more. And he goes for sentencing for July 1st. And I don't know, look like he didn't lost a little weight. Look like he didn't lost some weight here. So Pastor Jeff, I'll give you first dibs on this one, since you were looking forward to us talking about this here. So what you got to say?
Well, first of all, pray for one of his daughters, because my wife texted me today that the kids are already snickering at her at the school about her father.
Okay.
And I can
imagine how I
think her mother is going to have to end up pulling her out of that school, first of all, because it's a paid school that he ain't going to be able to pay for it no more. I felt bad for the little girl because she, you know, she's got a lot of personality and she thinks her dad is the greatest man in the world, and she's about to lose that man because they're gonna probably give him about 10 to 12 years.
Wow.
You know, for his crimes. You know, they say he's facing up to 45 years, but they're gonna run that concurrently. So, you know, so he'll probably end up with 10 years probably in July.
Wow.
But I knew he was going down. I followed the trial, his whole trial, for hours. You know, I'm putting a lot of hours listening to his trial because I felt close to the man because I could feel his pain. And you say he lost weight. I know he did, because the stress of going through a trial and, you know, blah, 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 you know, and the years that they say they're going to give you, you know, that stuff will eat you up. You know, when I was going through my trial, they said I was facing up to 75 years.
Mm.
Now, you know, because that's because they add the years up that you would get for all your counts separately and
okay.
Add them up. So when they say
wow.
That, you know, it's ridiculous because, you know, I barely did a year out of the whole situation, you know.
Thank God.
I'm feeling for him. You know, if he's at Fed time, he's going to have to do 85% of that time, you know. But the dude was very stupid. He was just stupid. Listening to all that he did, he was not – first of all, his lawyers just took his money because they had no defense. There was no defense for his stuff. No, none.
Mm.
He was the only one to testify, and all he kept saying was, it wasn't me. Somebody else, my accountant. This guy, the other hand, it was like the dude forged paperwork saying you got millions in your bank account and you had negative amounts in those bank accounts that you were saying you had millions, you know. And then you're doing fraud for big things, not even trying to, you know, get something little. You know, mansions and doing $1 million when you got $80 in the bank. You know,
yeah,
the whole
because
time
this is a lot of money. It's
he's
a lot
been
of money.
Fraud to fraud. Everything that he had, he's been living fraud to fraud. So he ain't never really had much money in the bank at, you know, that long. And just like he took that lady's money, you know, you took it because you had no money and you had to keep this lifestyle up. So you go take this old lady's money and then you go spend it on Louis Vuitton. They showed his closet in his house. You know, he got a walk-in closet that has everything expensive, every name brand, every watch, every shoe. And it's like, Negro, really? You really had to go that far on fraud when you know your stuff was on fraud? A black man already got he's under the microscope, and then you put yourself under a magnifying glass and microscope at the same time. He asked for it. He was just stupid. You know? Stupid.
Wow. I got a question as you listen to this, Pastor KL and Shantice. You know, we just got finished talking earlier about, you know, the depiction of prison from inmates. Now, he's already, am I correct, hasn't he been in jail before, Pastor Jeff? Didn't he spend some time
years.
In jail? Okay, so.
5 years.
So, you didn't spend 5 years. I thought so. I was like, it has to be like 4 or 5 years, I remember. All right, so you didn't spend, Shantice, Pascal, you just spent 4 or 5 years in jail. And as Pastor Jeff is talking, you then did, okay, so you then took the $90,000. You were trying to get the other guys $500,000. How many other people and things you then swindled to get this $1.6 million home you living up in and this Rolls Royce you driving and this closet and all of this stuff that Pastor Jeff is describing. Now, you didn't spend 5 years. I'm sure some of the stuff that these men and women were talking about in this, you know, this whole thing here, you didn't see this stuff here. Do you feel sorry for this here? Really? Pastor KL.
No, I definitely don't feel sorry. You know, when they say forgetting those things which are behind, and press it. You a preacher. You know, this should be your testimony as why you come out to do the right thing, as why you come out to serve God, as why you come out to deliver the word. You know, this should not be, you know, your plot to hoodwink the people. You know, I got a walk-in closet too. But you know what I use that for? I use that to sing because it echoes in there because there ain't nothing in there. I like to hear me sing every now and then in the walk-in closet. But no, I don't have all that kind of stuff. And listen, I tell the story all the time. I'm never going back to jail for no reason. When I tell you I dot my I's and cross my T's, I put my seatbelt on, I don't listen to my phone to my ear, I don't pass a stop sign. So you've been there already 5 years. You already know the conditions. You know what I mean? They're not putting you in the Taj Mahal part of prison, you know, and now because of what you've done, They're really going to get you. Not the preacher. No, you must be crazy.
He didn't have a chance. When he went to trial, he didn't have a chance because he was a preacher. And I tell preachers, don't go to trial with a jury. You better make a deal, you know, because you won't have a chance. It is, just like I said, I didn't commit that crime. They had no proof of the crime they accused me, you know, of committing. It was the jury, and they got a few people in there to say, "Oh yeah." Pastor helped me do this, right? And the jury is looking at me because I looked all right, and I had a nice house. They looked at me like he got to be guilty. You can't win because Bishop Moore, he made it worse for us because he was the epitome of what they think we all are.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
They think we all are taking people's money, you know, scamming and all of that. It made me angry that this dude was so flamboyant with it. It's like no cares. But what people don't realize was he was a fraudster before he was a preacher, and he was a fraudster as a preacher, you know. And that's what he was, a fraudster. You know, that's all he knew.
Wow. Shantice, you know, you're hearing, you know, this kind of stuff as a parishioner, you know, and you know, you've heard, I'm sure, you know, where those of us who are, you know, clergy, again, you know, this is the big thing out here now. You know, like, oh, they're taking money, they're scamming people. How important is it that you don't have this persona in front and behind the scenes, and now you are found guilty for taking this woman's $90,000, found guilty for trying to take somebody's half a million, and you heard what we talked about earlier, the depiction of, you know, the jail system from people who have been inmates. You just spent 5 years there. What's your thought?
Well, it's no surprise that he was found guilty. I didn't even know that there was a trial or anything like that. But to hear all of this morning, there's no part of me that's flabbergasted or startled. As parishioners, this reminds me of when we had the lesson in church. There was a series we God had us study, and a big part of that series was our responsibility to our pastors. And the pastors are not only here to govern us and to help us as parishioners, we have an obligation and a responsibility to help pastors too. So with that being said, fellow parishioners, if your pastor come to you and ask for $90,000, take that as the red flag, the alarms going off, the, like, come on. This is just also another way to show that as parishioners, we cannot be lazy as to who we sit under, the research that we do, you know, having a spiritual leader, being someone's spiritual leader is a heavy responsibility that you as a parishioner should not take lightly. You're governing my life spiritually. You're the link between me and Jesus. I need to know a few things about you. I need to now hold you accountable respectfully with a few things. This whole, you shouldn't question your pastor and all that. Stop being brainwashed. Stop being lazy and pay attention to what's going on. Because I actually read up on the story of, you know, that particular incident with the $90,000. And the whole time I was just like, and at no point you thought it odd that this was really being pursued. And yeah, you know, give him the money and he's going to do this and that and the third. And it's just like, so how are you and then a bishop, because my understanding, the bishop is over the pastor. So with the heavy obligations and tasks and assignments that a bishop has, how you got time to be all up in real estate like this? If you're supposed to be in tune with Jesus over my life and the life of everybody else in here, which if you take that job seriously, there's no time for you to even sleep. There's no time for you to watch TV like that. There's no time for you to be tweeting like that. There's no time for none of that. But you got time to be heavy in the real estate game. There's a problem. So we have to really make sure that we're paying attention to all these things so that we're not now being swindled and we're not aiding in his downfall, because it's no different than anyone else when someone comes and says, oh, I want to be able to do this. And you blindly just say, okay, and now you're helping them do this and now they fall. We have to make sure we do not do diligence and not aiding in that.
All righty. Ooh, that was a nice, thick, quick church folk segment. Thank you so much, Pastor Jeff, Pastor KL, and Sean Tease for your contribution into today's conversation, and we pray you have a blessed day.
You as well.
Thank you, too.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. All righty. Let's get this benediction here. We're going back to the old school. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. Numbers 6:22-26. You know, where do you even start today? You know, it's for us to start with the depiction of what jail is to an inmate, from an inmate's perspective. And, you know, some of these people, you know, they said that it was shorter than others. You know, the one who says that they, you know, he spent his teens, his 20s and his 30s, he spent 25 years, you know, in prison. And the stuff that they were actually describing, really made my heart feel heavy, and really, you know, and we have to be very careful because, again, you know, we're talking about, you know, these people who have committed some real serious crimes, and, you know, you have to pay for the stuff that you do. You really have to pay for the stuff that you do, and, you know, as you can see, as Pastor Jeff said, you know, there was, you know, there's some wardens who, you know, care, and there's some people that don't care, you know, who are running these prisons. You move from that thought to now we go to the other extreme as to someone who is supposed to be the person who's helping you to understand who Christ is, who God is, you know, supposed to help you, you know, turn your life over to the Lord and choose the right way to go and so forth and so on, who spent time in jail and who, or prison, whatever you want to call it, and, you know, who can say, you know what, I've been there. You know, someone wrote in and said, this is what the children need to hear. And you're right. You know, this is what that particular pastor, bishop, whoever it was, look how essential his experience was to some other person's walk, where he could give that testimony and say, listen, I've lived this life. I've served time. You know, this is what it's like. You don't want to be there. You don't want to go through this. If you can help it, don't. But does he do that? No. You go from being, you know, one type of criminal to another type of criminal. You're a criminal, you know, who wears the cloth, if you will. And you are really preying on people because people are trusting you, because this is why you got into this business of church, because you needed the quickest way people would trust you. And you're hitting on the very vulnerable individual. You know, you're talking about this woman who had her entire retirement savings. If she's an elderly woman today, can you imagine what life must have been like for her to accumulate $90,000? They didn't make all that kind of money back in the day. It's not like the money we make now. How long did it take her to get $90,000? And now you are spending the time to swindle her out of her money. You're strong-arming another man to give you $500,000. I remember reading, he threatened this guy. You know, he was intimidating him to give him this for his real estate venture. And like Pastor Jeff said, oh, they're going to hit him because you're already on the radar. They already hate God. They don't think much of God. They don't think much of parishioners. Of pastors and preachers. They don't care nothing about you. They already think that you're a criminal and you're already out here swindling people. Oh, they're going to hit him. They're going to hit him as hard as they possibly can. He's not going to get away with anything. And this is what we have, clergy actually helping you to be sucked up into this world, sucked up into this here, where he could have taken this experience and used it as vital information to help turn a person around. You know, we've been studying making friends for God. And as we're studying, if I can tell you how deep this thing is, when I tell you this study is so revealing of the sacrifices that you have to make in order to make friends for God. I mean, this is a tall order. This verse that says go out and disciple and draw people to God, that ain't nothing in comparison to how the onion skins have been peeled back, and you really got to see what it takes to make friends for God, to draw people to Christ, how God needs to use you, how you got to clean yourself up and clean yourself out, how you've got to lay yourself before God so that he can clean you up and he can clean you out before you can really do a job and bring people to God. And this prior life that these people have described, what they've gone through, is something that I'm sure he's experienced. I'm sure he's experienced this now, by now. In 5 years, if Pastor Jeff said he did that short time and he experienced what he experienced, imagine what you experienced in 5 years. And you would come right out and make people think that you are a man of God. You know, now you look at, okay, what do you deserve? Do you deserve what's been described by these people? So all the we've been doing, oh man, you know, that's messed up. Now look, didn't I say we were going to read some stuff? and now I have a different, you know, a different feeling about this whole thing. And I go to where Shantice goes to, you know, this stuff that they are describing, like I said a little while ago, sometimes it's worse than death. You're better off just to be dead. Just go and kill me, because if I had to go through this, you know, either I'm going to kill myself. That's what people do when they go inside, because they can't handle it. But you did it. And what you do is you put yourself under the subjection of anybody who's running that prison. Anybody. They don't care nothing about you. They figure you did the crime. Now they're gonna twist it. They're going to turn that vice harder and harder and tighter that you can't even deal with it. But do we play God? Do we still have an obligation to treat man a certain way if we were the ones who were running the prison? Do we have an obligation to at least ensure that they are eating properly? You know, the guy said, or the woman said, we're supposed to eat 1,800 calories a day. Yeah, we probably weren't. Well, if you don't like the food, you surely weren't. So what do we do when it's in our hands? I ask the same question Shantice asks. Are we going to now be in trouble with God? Because now we've taken it that far. Of course they need to pay. Of course they need to not live the life like one of the listeners said. You know, no. You know what's a luxury out here to us? It ain't got no business being a luxury to you in there. But do we have an obligation to at least provide the bare minimum, but not in a toxic or disgusting manner? Because we surely don't want to get in trouble with God because we playing God. So let's walk away thinking that. Yeah, they deserve it, but are we going to be the ones who dish out the punishment and now we have to face God? I don't think so. Not me. You've been listening to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. where we discuss matters of the heart, mind, and spirit. As you go through your day, be sure to set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. They will only serve as a distraction. Remember, prayer changes things. It's Pastor Steph signing off, and I want to thank my Due Time crew for always coming through big time. Thank you for hanging out with us and helping us do what we do. Thanks for helping to be a part of the conversation. Please do not miss this opportunity to give Jesus your life right now. Please do not miss this opportunity to strengthen your relationship with the Lord right now, and don't get into trouble. Strengthen that relationship instead. Later is not promised to any of us. Until tomorrow, God spares. Where is Wow Wednesday? Until then, I love you.